Well, welcome back to Shattering Myths. My pleasure to welcome IQ Al-Rasooli into the program. Last week, IQ, you and I discussed something that that most people probably didn't even want to consider. And that is that we said that there was very little chance that the Assad regime used chemical weapons within 3 miles of the presidential palace within the city limits of Damascus, particularly at a time when the Assad regime had for the past 6 months won virtually every battle. The war was all but over in the sense of any chance of the rebels prevailing. And therefore, for him to use chemical weapons at this time, 3 miles away from his home in Damascus, in the capital city, to invite the world to engage on behalf of his enemies would be way too stupid for the Assad we've come to know. Is that still your view, IQ, as another week has gone by?
Yes. I don't think he was the one who authorized anything. It is very possible that his brother did, who is the commander of the 4th Division, the tank division.
Yeah. Now, I personally, I don't think. Okay, I don't think that's the case. But let's at least listen to your the possibility here. Why would you say so?
Well, the irony here is that the Israeli said so. I didn't say that. Israeli intelligence intercepted conversations indicating that they would be using chemical weapons, and they identified the brother. They ended, I think, the 144th Brigade or something of the 4th Division. So, I mean, they were very specific. Why would Israel lie? Unless maybe there is a reason. Maybe you have a better idea than I have.
Yeah. The I've only heard one intercept. That's the one that that the United States has been touting. And the one intercept is there's a chief and chieftain in the military headquarters for Syria, who has placed a phone call to a junior officer on the front lines in that particular area. And he says, what in the hell happened? You know, I need an explanation. I've heard that there's a chemical attack here. I need to know what happened. And so the intercept that the United States has that it's touting and says, well, that's proof that they know that, you know, he was questioning somebody in his junior officer to say, did you do this? You know, I need to know why you did this. But that's not the call at all. The call is saying, oh, my God, tell me this didn't happen. I need answers. What on earth is going on there? Which is the kind of thing that you would expect at the headquarters to be an admission that it was not authorized by Assad or his regime. Now, one of the things we do know, IQ, which makes your scenario plausible, is that the chemical weapons that Syria has under its control are no longer in specific places that are controlled by the military hierarchy, and that what has happened to them is they have all been dispersed. And they're dispersed primarily among Alawite chieftains. The leaders of the Alawite clan have all been given custody of these things because Assad was concerned relative to their safety and what would happen if the West engaged. And so he moved his chemical and biological weapons and the systems to launch them to among Alawite chieftains. But even that being the case, why would anybody in their right mind that's part of the Assad regime use chemical and biological weapons 3 miles from his home?
Logic has nothing to do with it. With all due respect, we're not discussing you and me. But I agree with one single item. Assad did not authorize it. His regime did not authorize it. If his brother did it, it has nothing to do with the regime.
Correct.
Assad would not have done it for exactly the reasons you said. 3 miles away, he is winning.
Right.
He used it. It's stupid.
Right. Exactly. Now, there have been the Russians yesterday released to made a public declaration on the floor of the United Nations. And the Russians, who have personnel and forensic experts in Syria, conducted a comprehensive review of the site and of the chemical agent. And they said two things that are profound. They said the quality of the sarin gas that was used was of a level that they called cottage. It's the kind of level that your household terrorist could make. It was not commercial grade. It was not industrial grade. It was not government quality sarin. And there's a huge difference in terms of weaponizing gases and poisons. And he said, this has all the hallmarks of being made by the rebels. Second, he said the delivery mechanism was not sophisticated either. It's the kind of scuds that are being used by the rebels every day. It was a low-grade, inaccurate scud missile that was carrying the sarin. You know, the kind of scud missiles that Hamas tries to send into Israel, and they that half of the ones that they send into Israel land on themselves. And the Russian testimony to the United Nations was that that was the delivery mechanism. Went off course, crude sarin, and that was is what caused this. What reason would the Russians have to lie?
There is absolutely no reason for the Russians to lie, and I agree with them from your point, from the, what you said. I'll tell you, you know as well as I do.
Yes.
That the Muslim Brotherhood, Al Qaeda, Al Salafis, the Muslim so-called fundamentalists,
yes,
will use any weapon.
Right.
To massacre as many Muslims as possible.
Right.
Then display them for the United Nations and the
right.
world and say it was the Israelis who did it, the Americans who did it, or the Assad regime who did it.
Yeah, there's a video out that's being promoted by the BBC this morning called The World Has Failed Our Nation. And it is a production that shows a crater in a, and what they're saying is a school that looks more like a hotel. It's got a swimming pool in the background and the like. And the ages of the people who are victimized are all over the board. So, you know, it's certainly being presented as a school playground, but the victims don't match that. Where it looks like there are some victims that are badly burned. And then they pan around the room, and when the camera pans around, the other guys stand up like they're zombies, and they kind of shake like zombies. And it's being presented as, well, there was a jet that dropped, that circled over and then decided that they were going to drop an incendiary bomb, and the incendiary bomb, we don't know what was in it, but it burned all these people. How horrible is the Assad regime?
But and, the BBC, with all due respect, the BBC is dysfunctional.
It is.
The BBC is the voice of Islam. The BBC
right.
is the voice of the Arabs.
Correct.
Has been for 65 years. Nothing new.
Right. Yeah, it was, you just looked at it and said, oh my God, what are you doing here? This is, I'm not going to say that everybody that they showed was faked, but it was so obvious that half of it was faked. And you say, why are you having to perpetrate this? And why are you claiming that what looks like, you know, if you look at the sidewalk and the side of the building, it looks identical to what the sidewalk and the side of the building looked like with in Boston with the pressure cooker bomb. That's exactly what it looked like. And you say, why are you telling me that this fell out of the sky and Assad did this and perpetrating, promoting this video at this time? What is it that you're trying to do? Is this, do you want this video to be the new Lusitania?
Yes. This video is like Al Jazeera. The BBC is not different from Al Jazeera.
Yeah.
You have the Al Jazeera now in America, thanks to, of course, to Al Gore with $500 million.
Right. Now, I want you to tell you what's worse. Let's just say that Assad's brother deploy a chemical artillery shell or even a chemical scud missile, that he was stupid enough that these scud missiles, which, you know, are plus or minus eternity. I mean, you don't know if they're going to come and land on you or go in some other direction. He was stupid enough that he decided to fire a scud missile into an area that was 3 miles from his brother's home. and in the city of Damascus. He was stupid enough to do that. Now, I would like you to tell me, how is that worse than al-Nusra going into a village, telling its mujahideen that they can go rape the nuns at a monastery because those nuns are opposed to Allah, and that when the priests try to stop the jihadists from raping the nuns, they parade everybody in the entire village, including the women and children, out, take these two priests in the middle of the mob, and then cite from the Quran, screaming Allahu Akbar, where over the period of about 15 minutes, they slowly saw these men's heads off.
No difference? No, in fact, it's worse.
Of course it's worse.
It's worse. I want Americans who are listening, because they've got to understand, I come from Iraq. My background is Arabic. My language is Arabic. I meet with Arabs. I listen to Arabs. I talk to Arabs. So I'm not somebody who is in Europe or in America luxuriating on the English language. The Muslims are worse, and the ones who are opposing Assad are 100,000 times worse than Assad will ever be.
And that's something, because Assad, Bashar Assad, is one of the most evil men in the world. And
well,
he is
more evil than he is.
We agree 100%. And it's not our opinion. It's just fact. If you recognize that in your country, about 1,000 people a month now are dying at the hands of suicide bombers. Now, and almost all suicide bombs are placed either in or around mosques or in and around shopping centers so that they kill the maximum number of women and children and young people. And, I mean, they are, as far as I'm concerned, there's nothing more heinous than a suicide bomb. And about 1,000 Iraqis are dying each month just to suicide bombs. I mean, forget about assassinations here. But just the suicide bombs, about 1,000 a month. I want you to tell me how the perpetrators of those suicide bombs differ from the mujahideen that are fighting Assad in Syria.
They don't differ, not an iota. No Muslim can differ from another Muslim. As long as they are fundamentalists, they are all terrorists.
Yeah, it is impossible, ladies and gentlemen, to be a good Muslim and not be a terrorist. All good Muslims are terrorists. That is not my opinion. It is a statement of fact. It is irrefutable. I know it. IQ knows it. And we hope one day that all of you come to know it as well. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. At the end of the last segment, I made a politically incorrect statement that happens to be absolutely correct. I'd like to restate it and then demonstrate for you that statement is correct, that it is impossible to be a good Muslim and not be a terrorist. All good Muslims are terrorists. The definition of good and bad Muslim, IQ, where would you find the Islamic definition of a good or a bad Muslim?
In the Quran.
All right. In the Quran, Allah says that anything that he reveals that is contradicted by something that he reveals later is abrogated, and you go with what he said most recently. The last two surahs of the Quran are the 9th and the 5th, are they not?
Yes.
Okay. The 9th surah, the primary focus of the 9th surah is to label good and bad Muslims, is it not?
Correct.
All right. And the definition of a good Muslim in the 9th surah is a Muslim who is willing to engage in jihad. Is that not correct?
Absolutely right.
Is there any hint that jihad is a spiritual struggle?
Well, considering I know the Arabic language, I have offered $100,000 to the first human being to show us the word jihad in any part of the Quran or Hadith as a spiritual struggle. $100,000.
Yeah. So the answer is absolutely unequivocally,
no.
Irrefutably no, that jihad is fighting and killing with any arms and weapons and any tactic that you can muster. Correct?
Yes, even aircraft and
yes.
Ships and missiles and gas and anything.
Right. Everything, anything that you can muster. In fact, the Quran says anything that you can muster. Needs to be deployed in committing jihad. And in the 9th surah, a good Muslim is a Muslim who engages in jihad. Is that a factual statement?
factual 100%.
All right. And then the ninth surah defines bad Muslim as a hypocrite. You know, you're a hypocrite if you're pretending to be a Muslim, but you're really not a Muslim. Allah, who is a pretend God as well, but let's put table that for a moment. According to Allah, therefore according to Muhammad, a Muslim who does not engage in jihad is labeled a hypocrite. Now, is that correct?
That is correct. So it becomes an infidel.
Right. So a peaceful Muslim, what we consider a good person, is called in the Quran a hypocrite. Is that
correct.
Factually correct? Is there any way that I have misappropriated that, misunderstood that, or is that absolutely, unequivocally, undeniably true?
Undeniably, unequivocally correct.
All right. That being the case, what does Allah tell the good jihadist Muslims to do to the hypocritical peaceful Muslims, the pretend faux Muslims who now are viewed as non-Muslims by Allah and in fact as infidels? What does Allah tell the jihadist to do to the hypocritical Muslims? He tells you to slaughter them, to kill them, right? Yeah, to kill them. To kill them. All right.
To murder them.
Right. And what does Allah say in the ninth surah that he's going to do to the bad Muslims, these hypocritical Muslims, and hypocritical and bad Muslims because they're peaceful? What does Allah say that he is going to do to them once the jihadist Muslims kill them?
Wow. They will go to his hell, whereby he will torture them even more for eternity.
Yeah. In fact, does he make a distinction on the peaceful pretend Muslims in his abuse of them in hell? Because my recollection is that he says specifically that once you kill them, and I want you to kill them, that I'm going to torture them in the hottest place in hell.
True. Same hottest place for infidels like you and I and 80% of humanity
right.
who are not Muslim.
So, based on the ninth surah, according to Allah, it's the second to the last handed down, so it can only be refuted by the fifth surah, and the fifth surah doesn't refute it. The fifth surah is a call to war against Christians. Now, so according to the ninth surah, if you are a peace-loving individual and you call yourself a Muslim, you're not a Muslim. You are a pure hypocrite. Your God hates you. He wants good Muslims who are terrorists to kill you so he can torture you in hell. Therefore, IQ, the President of the United States says that he wants to prevail in Syria on behalf of the moderate Muslims, the peaceful Muslims, the freedom-loving Muslims. Is there such a thing?
No.
Could you find one in the entire universe? Could you find one of those?
If he is a Muslim and he's a believing Muslim, he cannot be peaceful. It is impossible.
That's right. It is impossible. Ladies and gentlemen, what the United States is planning to do in Syria, what this president wants to do in Syria, is absolutely and grotesquely immoral. It's counterproductive. It is suicide. It is based on a pack of lies, and it will end up costing Americans dearly. I'm Zion Diatta. We're here with IQ Rasuli. And we're pursuing a series of questions that every American ought to be considering, particularly since the President of the United States wants to engage in a war in Syria. IQ, you experienced the Iraq of Saddam Hussein. You lived there while
yes.
Saddam Hussein was the dictator of Iraq. I'd like you to tell me whether the Iraq of Saddam Hussein or the Iraq post the American invasion, which one was freer, safer, and less prone to terrorism?
The Iraq under Saddam Hussein, obviously.
All right.
I think obviously because I lived it.
Yeah. Now, that being the case, and by the way, I proved it because I wrote a book called The Islamic Terrorist Timeline where I actually proved it. Now, that being the case, when Americans simplistically looked at the invasion of Iraq and said, Saddam Hussein, bad guy, let's go and depose him, and didn't consider the consequences, didn't recognize what would happen if you gave one person one vote and the people did what they did in Iraq, which was eminently predictable, when we don't look at the consequences by reacting on a simplistic manner, we can make a bad situation much worse, can't we?
100,000 times worse. And I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah, we did. We made it 100,000 times worse in Iraq. A very bad situation was turned almost infinitely worse in Iraq and the world as a whole as a result of a simplistic view. Now, I want to turn the page to Syria. The simplistic view is, okay, let's assume that that Assad's brother deployed the chemical weapons and he killed several hundred people in a war where 110,000 people have died, and therefore the French and the Americans want to engage in war and they want to punish the man. But sounds totally appropriate, moral. Well, boy, we're really doing the right thing for God and country. Until you realize the consequence. What happens once we start bombing Iraq? If you were Assad, what would be the first thing you would do if you knew the story of Saddam Hussein that ultimately he crawled out of a hole and then was hung? And you know the story of Muammar Gaddafi, which is when America stopped bombing, they didn't stop bombing until he was dead. If America drops the first bomb on Syria, what would you do?
I would fight to the death.
Right.
Not only would I fight to the death. I mean, Americans have got to understand something. Assad's power militarily is not the same as Gaddafi. Gaddafi had nothing.
Right.
Assad will attack the Americans if they attack him, and he most probably will sink one or two ships.
Yeah.
Something else is very important, as you said, and I've been saying it for the last 20 radio interviews in America.
Yes.
Okay, you get rid of Assad. Who are we replacing him with?
Yeah,
that
well, that's
the most important question.
I actually think it's the second most important question in this particular case, because I think the point you just made is the most important question. It's the reason that Saddam Hussein didn't respond to the American invasion of Iraq is he couldn't. He didn't have chemical and biological weapons, so he didn't deploy them. He couldn't. He didn't. Only because he couldn't. We know for a fact that Assad can. And Assad knows that the moment the first American bomb is dropped, that we won't stop dropping bombs until he's dead, and there is a 0% chance that he's going to go out there and say, okay, go ahead and kill me, see if I care. Where he's not only going to fire at American ships, he's going to fire those missiles filled with poison gas at Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. And at Mach 3, do you know how long it's going to take those missiles to go from the suburbs of Damascus into Tel Aviv? Yeah, a little more than that. A little more than that, but not a lot more. And there is no way in the world that they can all be blown out of the air. None. And what do you think the chances are that he's not going to send missiles into Turkey now that they've turned on him? And missiles into Jordan and because they've turned on him? And missiles into Iraq, where we have and missiles into Saudi Arabia? Is he not going to go down in a blaze of glory from his point of view if we drop the first bomb?
Definitely. Why are you and I discussing this? Why isn't the American government discussing this?
You know,
not aware that the consequences will be catastrophic? We are not discussing. Had they figured out what will happen after they get rid of him, no problem. I agree with them. Go ahead. But when you cannot predict what's going to happen after you get rid of him, then they have no right to do anything.
But I predicted what was going to happen when we left Afghanistan. It's what's going to happen. I predicted what was going to happen when we left Iraq, and it is what happened. I can tell you exactly what's going to happen if we kill Assad. It's obvious what's going to happen. Mujahideen, Sunni Muslims, terrorists, are going to form a terrorist government just as they did in Libya. And that as a result of that government, and them now having control of whatever residual chemical and biological weapons and rockets and ballistic missile deployment systems, they're going to go on their jihad against Israel. That's what's going to happen. We're going to take a very bad situation and make it infinitely worse, just like we did in Afghanistan, just like we did in Iraq. And there is not one chance in a billion that we can improve Syria by killing Assad.
No chance whatsoever. We cannot improve any Muslim state. This is a fact.
Right.
No Muslim state can be improved. If they want to kill each other with any weapons they want, this is their business. As long as they don't point it at us, I honestly don't give a damn.
Yeah, and you know, I've gotten to the point where that has become my view, and you say, well, how could you not care? You know, it's a human life is a human life. You know, when you become so savage, as these jihadists have become, when you think that it is appropriate to throw acid in the faces of little girls, when you think that it's appropriate to rape little girls and then throw them in prison after you've raped them, when you think it's appropriate to cut off and slice off people's heads, when you think it's appropriate to send a child into a marketplace as a suicide bomber, when you have reached that level of depravity, when you go off and you despise and you're enraged at everything that is good, when you've reached that level of depravity, there is no helping you. You can't be helped. What happened to America when it went into Somalia to try to feed the starving people?
They got screwed real good.
Real good. Remember Black Hawk Down? That's
yes,
the nature. Islam corrupts Muslims to the point that they are incapable of being good. The only way to be a good person, a decent person, and be a Muslim is to be a rotten Muslim. And so long as they are rotten Muslims, they have no influence whatsoever in their society. There isn't a single Islamic society on earth where a bad Muslim who can be a good person has any influence. Not one.
Because they're dead. They are either murdered, slaughtered, imprisoned, or exiled.
Correct. There is not one chance in hell, 0% possibility, that America can drop bombs on Syria and end up with a better result than what will happen if we just walk away and say, you know, there is nothing we can do. It's sad that lots of people are dying, but there is nothing we can do. If we walk away and say there's nothing we can do, the result will be vastly better than if we drop that first bomb. If we drop that first bomb, poison gas will go everywhere. Missiles will be launched everywhere, and the Mujahideen terrorists that we were allegedly fighting and killing in Pakistan, that we're allegedly fighting and killing in Afghanistan, that we were allegedly fighting and killing in Iraq, it is those exact same people with the exact same mindset that will be in control of that country and all of its weapons.
Yeah, you know what I find offensive? The greatest threat to humanity today is a nuclear Iran.
Correct.
They're doing nothing. The same Obama, the same Cameron, the same leaders in Western Europe are doing absolutely nothing.
That's not true.
And
that's not
Iran,
true. I want to take it.
Bomb, we
I
are guaranteed a third world war.
Yeah, that part's true. I'm going to take a different point of view here. We did a lot. First of all, the uranium-235 that they are enriching to fissile purities for a nuclear bomb. It's 4% fissile purity for a nuclear reactor, and they are all of their centrifuges are now designed and working on enriching the uranium to 20% fissile purity, because at 20% it's a very, very short order to get it to 90. That the uranium-235 that the Iranians have, the United States gave to them. The nuclear plant that the Iraqis have, which is their cover for their peaceful electricity generating program, America's built for them. When Saddam Hussein was the enemy of Iran, Iran was unable to devote the resources necessary to complete its nuclear ambitions. When the United States invaded Iraq and gave Iraq to Iran, it enriched Iran and gave Iran authority over a huge crescent of land in the Middle East. It's not that we have done nothing. It's that we have aided and abetted their nuclear program. IQ?
Correct. Correct, because the oil from Iraq is also going to Iran.
Of course. It's how Iran gets around the sanctions, because we gave Iraq to Iran.
That's it.
That's it. What we did in Iraq was suicidal. And it was suicidal primarily for the reason that IQ has just mentioned, which is by giving Iraq to Iran, we enabled Iran to complete its nuclear program, and a nuclear Iran is the single greatest threat to the world that exists today. And that's what we did. We're responsible for that. But keep in mind, IQ, the Syrian civil war is being waged now for only one reason. It is a direct result of a single act. The Syrian civil war is being waged because America invaded Iraq, which at the time was the Syrians' primary ally, gave Iraq to Iran, gave, therefore, Syria's ally is now Iran, and Iran has influence over everything from Lebanon all the way throughout Iran. It's a huge swath of land, and as a direct result of that, we now find the civil war in Syria. Had the United States not invaded Iraq, there would be no civil war in Syria. The balance of power was so changed that the Saudi Arabians and the Kuwaitis and other Sunni clans in the Middle East decided they could use Syria as a proxy war to counter the effect of the American invasion of Iraq. We caused this war. We'll get IQ al-Rasuli's response to that after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. IQ, I ended the segment with a statement. I said that the United States is solely responsible for the Syrian civil war. So if we want to blame anyone for what is happening in Syria, we should look in the mirror. Is that a legitimate statement?
It is a legitimate statement, but it's truncated because we are only addressing the issue of what Bush did.
Yes.
It is amazing to read and watch what Obama has been doing for the last 5 years.
Yes.
The same Obama who trashed George Bush about Iraq, Afghanistan, mm-hmm. Guantanamo, the economy, is the same who has not only been continuing George Bush's legacy, but making it even worse.
Of course.
Has anybody in this government figured out what will happen afterwards? Do they think that Russia and China and Iran will just sit down and do nothing?
Yeah, change we can believe in is holding the same course but accelerating the speed to which we go along this course. Not only did the United States, is the United States solely responsible for the civil war in Syria, I want to look at this from another example. Before we take on holier than thou, we need to punish the Syrian government because they may have indirectly gassed 300 to 500 people. If the United States had Canada and Mexico and the Caribbean nations, as well as the Central and South American nations, if all of those nations collectively decided that they didn't like the United States anymore, and they particularly did not like Caucasians in the United States, and that they decided that it was their duty, their God-given duty, to supply every manner of weapon that they could supply to non-Caucasians in the United States to go and slaughter Caucasians, what do you think that the Caucasians in the United States would do?
Defend themselves.
Right.
To the limit.
So how is that any different than Syria, where the Sunni Muslim nations decided that the Sunni Muslims in Syria needed to have all manner of weapons so that they could go kill the Shia Muslims in Syria? How is it any different than the scenario I just described?
It's not really different.
No. So how are we, why can we sit on our high moral horse and say that when Assad kills, it's bad and he needs to be punished, and when the Saudi Arabians and the Kuwaitis and the other Sunni nations that have sent weapons into Syria, expressly so Sunni jihadists can kill Shias, how are they better?
But they're not only doing it in Syria, they do it in Iraq, in my country.
Exactly.
They're blowing up left, right, and center in cinemas, in mosques, in kindergarten, anywhere. Doesn't make any difference. They just kill people.
Correct.
There is no difference. America should not interfere. That's the bottom line.
Right.
It's none of your bloody business.
Right.
It does not affect America. It's not a threat to America. Why are you sitting on a high horse of morality? Since when?
Yes, since when? Yeah, since almost every war that we've engaged based on a lie. And almost every war we've engaged in, we made a bad situation worse. And look at Europe.
Actually, with Muslims, every war you got engaged in a Muslim country, you lost.
Correct. And
you beat Japan in World War II. You beat Germany in World War II. You destroyed the Soviet Union. You cannot defeat Islam by war.
Correct. You can't beat any. You can't beat any religion with bullets and bombs. You know, I hear so many talk radio hosts say it's all these people know is force. So we have to use force against them. That's all they know. Yeah, it's all they know is force. But it's just like Vietnam. Every time that we dropped bombs from a B-52 on Vietnam, all the Viet Cong had to do is point up there and say, who's trying to kill you? Who's dropping that napalm on you? That's the enemy. We manufactured 100 enemy for everyone we killed in Vietnam. The same thing is true in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Libya. Everything we have touched in the Middle East, including if we are drone bombings in Pakistan, we manufacture 100 enemy for everyone we kill every time we drop a bullet and bomb, because you can't defeat a religion with weapons. There's only one tool. There's only one tool. There's one tool that can actually defeat a religion.
Yes,
one.
To prove it to be corrupt, to prove it to be ungodly.
That's correct, which is why we do this.
That's it. That's it.
And if we don't...
You and I and people like us are more deadly to Islam than all the atomic weapons that America has.
That is correct. And because we take the time to explain why Islam corrupts people and why there is nothing that we can do to help a Muslim. The only thing that we can do to save a Muslim is to free the Muslim of Islam. And until that is our approach, we will continue to kill people, making a bad situation much worse. Thank you, IQ. We'll talk to you next week.